Hello everybody, welcome or welcome back to B&B Anime. I am Blue and...
I'm Brad!
And today we're going to be discussing Solo Leveling, but before we get into it properly, we have to talk about ourselves.
Yeah, because we're vain people, hooray!
What you don't know is we've already spent the past 17 minutes talking about ourselves off recording.
Hey, that's pretty good for us, because we bantered for like 30 minutes before the last episode, and then we still bantered for a fucking hour and a half during the episode.
Yeah.
So, you know, here we are.
Yeah. Oh, one thing I did want to get talk about that is kind of Solo Leveling related, but it's not Solo Leveling, is I keep getting this ad for a Solo Leveling RPG on my phone. And it says Canada exclusive. And I don't know if it really is Canada exclusive. So I was wondering, I know you have like ad block and you pay for shit, so you might not have had ads. But have you heard of a Solo Leveling RPG for a mobile game?
So I've seen the TikTok ads for it. Hang on. Let me look.
Cause I keep getting this ad. Solo
Leveling.
And I was like, and it says Canada exclusive on it. So I'm like, are they just saying that, or is this legit Canada exclusive?
Is it this? No, it's literally the same game.
But you see exclusive Canada early access right there in bold on that screenshot.
I think they're literally... Oh, so if you pull it up in the App Store, is it like, can you play it now?
Yes, I can play it.
Okay, so we can only download it, but we don't actually have access to it yet. So you do actually have early access to it.
Okay, one of the rare things that Canada gets before America that wasn't made in Canada.
Right?
Yeah. It's already got, it's at 4.2 stars with over 500,000 downloads.
Interesting. But Solo Leveling is just such a cult following, so I don't doubt that.
It's number 2 in top 3.
I mean, again, I don't doubt it. Solo Leveling is absolutely massive. It's one of the biggest manhwa ever. So it every bit of that tracks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What have you been up to this week?
What have I been up to? Making my maps a little bit more. Studying Japanese. Haven't really done much. I had a migraine really bad on Monday, which is when we were supposed to record this episode. And I was editing the Apothecary Diaries episode. And I was sitting in my chair and then I got like a little bit of a headache and I was like, oh, this is like, I know what this is. Like, it's in my eyeball. I was like, it was early enough where I was like, I can probably curb this. And I was sitting there and I was like, okay, no, it's getting a little bit worse. And I was like, okay, I'm going to message Brad and just be like, I got a headache coming. Like, I don't know how it's going to be, but I got one coming and it's either going to be fine or it's not going to be fine. And I was editing away and then I got to the point where I was like, okay, no, I feel really nauseous. So I'm going to go lie down. And I didn't finish editing the last bit. I had a section of it left and I was like, I'm going to go lie down for a bit. And so I lay down for a bit and then I was like, okay, it's not going away. So I just need to get this episode done. So I came up and I edited the last bit and then I thought I uploaded it, but I clearly didn't. And I was like, okay, I'm good. Now I can just like die. And so I went to my room, shut all the blinds, and I wasn't tired. That's the most annoying thing about when you get a migraine, is that sometimes you can sleep it off, but if you're not tired and you can't fall asleep, you can't, like, have sounds, you can't have light, like, you can't stimulate yourself in any way. So you're just laying there in pain, like, doing nothing, because, like, you literally can't have, like, you feel like you're going to throw up and die of pain if like anything else happens. So you're just like laying in contemplation for hours until you feel sleepy enough to actually sleep. And it ended up becoming a pretty bad migraine, although the nauseousness faded off, which I was glad for. So I was able to eat. But it was one of those ones where it was like in my eyeball and then like a straight rod down to the back of my neck. So it was yeah, it was like, imagine, this is so graphic, but imagine a pencil's like shoved through your eyeball down to your neck. Like, that's the line that the migraine took.
Yeah.
And I got to the point in it where at about like 10 p.m. or whatever, I was able to like get up and walk around and be like, okay. so long as I have my hand pressing up against my eye, like shoving my hand into my eyeball, I was able to like go around. But I tried all of my tricks. I tried caffeine. I tried sugar. I tried sleeping. I tried getting up and walking around. I tried eating, like all of my normal things that can sometimes curb a migraine in the early stages just did not work this time. And yeah, it ended up being a pretty bad one. And then yesterday I was just foggy all day, like post-migraine drunk. And then finally got the episode out. So sorry it's late, but I genuinely thought I had uploaded it, but did not. And yeah, and then today I'm feeling a lot better. But yeah, I'm not a super regular migraine haver, but I am every like fortnight, I probably get one, you know? But like,
yeah.
Yeah, not enough to look into like things like Botox that can help with migraines and stuff, because apparently you have to get them like at least a couple times a week for that to actually be effective. So,
well, I'm glad you managed to get through it. It was one of those things to where I knew as soon as you messaged me and you're like, yeah, I've got a headache. I think it's a migraine coming on. I'm just going to go lie down. I was like, all right, we are recording Wednesday.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those things to where for one, anytime you've told me you've had a headache, I've written off what we were doing that day, because it's never like you've never gotten back to me and like, yeah, I'm fine. But also it's one of those things of we both know, like, you don't fuck around with headaches, because that ruins just the mood in general. So even if there's like some lingering effects, it's like, nah, let's do this another day. Because you and I also have an understanding at this point of, like, if we're not at 100%, we're not doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, it's one of those things where, like, when you're working with someone on a collaborative project or, you know, just on a job or whatever, and both of you have an understanding of sickness, you know? Like, if you have, like, chronic illness or chronic pain, or have a family member with it or whatever, it just makes things so much easier to just be like, nah, not today. Like, sorry, wish I could, can't today. And just because, like, I've been in positions before with work. When I used to work at a clothing store fair few years ago now, there was a time when I got a migraine and I called in and I was like, hey, getting a migraine. I was on closing shift. I was like, I'm not going to be able to come in. And my boss at the time was like, okay, call up your coworkers to see who can cover for you. And I was like, okay, like, I'll try, but like, I'm very sick right now. And so I texted everybody and called everybody, and nobody was able to come in. So I then felt the obligation of, well, I'll just have to go in then, you know? And like, I'm fairly certain that was her goal, was to be like, you're coming in anyway, you know? So I missed the first half of my shift. Because there was people there were people able to work, like it was crossover shift. So I didn't go for the beginning bit, and then went for the last few hours to close out the day. And I was like, I can't guarantee that the till is correct. I can't say that I've locked up the safe properly. I can't say that I've like done all of our safety procedures for the store. Like, I cannot guarantee anything with you right now because I am in severe pain. And I remember, like, that moment is very clear in my mind. And whenever I'm working in a management position, I use that as reference of what not to do in circumstances, because it was so insulting and mean. And just, I took the job. I always, when I interview for jobs, say, look, I have chronic pain. You know, I have chronic illness. There are chances are that there are going to be days when I can't come in for whatever reason. I'm very upfront about it, because I know it's tricky. And I just felt really disrespected in that moment. And it's like, it's so good then, in comparison, to work in jobs and in positions and on projects with people that just get it when I'm like, I can't today. And they're like, cool, see you whenever, you know? Like, that's so respectful. I don't know. I think about that moment a lot. Like, it's become almost a core memory for me to be like, That was really mean. Like, I was in a lot of pain and you like made me feel like that. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't understand that whole mentality of managers of, you need to find somebody to cover your shift. No, fuck you. You're the manager. That's your job. I've called and told you, hey, I'm sick. I can't make it in. I've done my job. You, like, if I try to find somebody to cover my shift, I'm doing you a courtesy that you are not owed.
Yeah.
Because, again, that's not my job as an employee to, you know, have to do that. And so as someone who is a manager now, like, I would never do that to any of my employees. But also, I hold my employees in such a high regard, and I hold them to such a standard of that, like, hey, if you can't perform up to that standard, then I would prefer you to, you know, stay home, do whatever you have to do, rest and recover, because we can't have you not performing at your best, because you know what I do for a living. And it is such a niche variation of retail in that our customers genuinely rely on us on whether or not they eat. Like, it's not like we work in a restaurant to where patrons, like, if you, you know, if you can't get your cheeseburger, you'll fuck off and go find whatever you want elsewhere. Like, that's perfectly fine. But if we fuck up, our customers don't eat because their jobs are fucked. So therefore, like, if we can't perform at our best, then I would prefer you stay home and handle whatever you got to handle, because I don't want that trust with my customers broken. But also, I just prefer to be the manager that I would want, because I've had managers like that in the past. Like, I had a manager that tried to get me to work whenever my grandfather passed away, who was basically my father. He's like, no, no, like, you can work this weekend. I was like, no, fuck you. I'm not working. By the way, here's my 2-week notice, because you can go fuck yourself. And I mean, that those are my exact words. Like, whenever I handed him my 2-week notice, I was like, here, go fuck yourself, because that is disrespectful to ask someone to do that. Like, that is absolutely as low as humanly possible. Whenever somebody is at a really low point, be like, no, you still got to work. Like, no, fuck you. Like, that's against policy. You know me well enough. I thrive off of fuck you energy. So if you disrespect me to that level, then no, fuck you. You can deal with the consequences of your actions.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't even know how we got onto this topic.
I don't know either. Somehow we got on it, but if you're a manager and you're listening to this, don't be a dick.
No, just, I think you, both of us have worked in management positions. You're currently in a management position. I think it's important for managers to take into account that their staff feel the same way that you do whenever you go to work and you have a shitty day. Like, that's a universal feeling. So if you're feeling sick or something has happened in your life to where you are not capable of doing a good job, also, as a manager, don't you want your job's done well the first time, as opposed to having to go back and, like, tell people that they did a bad job and then having to go and make corrections to mistakes that were made because people weren't working at their best? Create an environment that people thrive in, and the way you do that is by understanding, building trust, and listening.
I mean, yeah, that's, I don't get it. It's just, I don't know, it's frustrating being in the position that I'm in. And I mean, you know me at this point. Like, I am so fucking tired and burnt out right now, but I can't put that on my employees, because they have their own lives. They have their own shit going on. So it's not on me to take the stress from my job and lay it on them. Like, as a boss, it's my job to take as much stress off of them so that way they can put their best foot forward. To where, you know, everybody can perform to the best of their abilities, because it's all a give and take thing. Like, you and I help each other to where, like, neither of us get to the point to where we're going to collapse. And it's, you know, it should be that way at work too. Like, you should, especially in a position of management, you lead by example. And that's what I'll always tell my people, is that, like, hey, like, I will do everything I can to put you in the best position going forward, to that, you know, once you're, you know, in this position, you don't have anything to worry about.
Yeah.
Like, my employee now, like, I've done everything I can to get her ready for her next role, because if you want to stick with doing what you're doing, then you want to, like, you want to be as ready as possible to take that step, because if you don't, who knows when that next opportunity is going to come. But I was also always that employee of, I've known how to do the people's jobs like two or three steps above me. Mm-hmm. So that way, when the time comes, I'm ready to take whatever step is necessary.
Yeah.
But yeah, nah, I don't know. Work dumb, but I am, I'm very happy with the dynamic that you and I have to where we just have that level of respect and understanding with one another to where it's just like, hey, I'm having a shit day. Can we do something later? Mm-hmm. But also, I have to be having a really shit day to cancel this with you, because this is my safe space.
Yeah.
Sitting here and talking to you. Like, I'm depressed anyway, but if I don't get this on the weekly basis, I'm more depressed. I look forward to this so much every week, and I'm saying this too fucking much at this point. Like, I feel like I'm saying this every episode, so I need to fucking stop because it's getting old. But I also tell you all the time how much I love and appreciate you and love this, because God, it means so much.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way. Like, when I'm physically up for it, I fucking love doing this. It's so fun. I mean, we wouldn't have done it for 4 years if we didn't enjoy it. We would have been in a long time ago.
Yeah, and we wouldn't keep striving to do better. Or trying to do new things and just diversify, because we, you know, we want this to be as fun for everyone else as it is for us. But also, we still, you know, we still make this for us.
Yeah. Honestly, at the end of the day, we don't really give a shit about how many listeners listen. We love every single person that does listen. But if nobody listened, we would still make it.
Yeah, it's, you know, we appreciate each and every one of you that listen to this. We really do.
Yeah. Yeah, we really, really, really appreciate you guys listening. I don't want to deny that fact, but this is made for us. We're selfish in that sense.
It's, you know, the whole vanity bit we do at the beginning of this, it is a bit, but also it's like, as much as we, you know, love y'all, I love and appreciate you more, which is why we're, you know, why we're still together doing like this
best
shit.
Best friends. So,
like, oh my God. Oh yeah, my, it's God. Like, we're going to Japan or
it's
something.
It's like we're like besties or something.
Yeah. Or it's like we're going to a convention together, like, in like a couple of months. What the hell? Oh, by the way, I've got us dinner plans while we're doing the convention loop.
Okay.
I've got Canadian friends that live in Edmonton. So I messaged her and I was like, hey, so listen, Blue and I are going to be in Edmonton for Animathon. You and your husband want to go get dinner one night? She was like, absolutely, I do.
Sick.
I want to try to meet all the online homies at some point or another. Yeah, so this is the perfect opportunity.
There's a ramen restaurant that works in conjunction with the convention center, like with the Animathon. So we could go and get ramen if you wanted to. Get
hell yeah. Don't tempt me with a good time.
I remember it being really good. But like I said, the last time I went, I was like 18. And I'm not 18 anymore.
It's also one of those things of you never know what or like how much nostalgia plays a factor in that. So, you know, it's just one of those things of you never know. Yeah. But if it's anything like the nudes I get from the nice Japanese lady down the street, they're incredible. So,
yeah, I remember it being really good. But I was with the twins at the time. I was cosplaying as Nurse Joy. Megan was Urza from Fairy Tail. I made her cosplay. I also made Melanie's. She was Lucy from Fairy Tail. And I also made hers. And so I made three cosplays. Because I wanted to cosplay and I wasn't going to cosplay on my own. So I was like, who do you want to cosplay as? And they are like, Lucy and Ezra from Fairy Tail. I was like, okay, I'll make them. You just buy the wigs. And so so they bought the wigs and I dyed my hair pink because fuck wigs. and we went to the convention together.
You know, that I guess that's one thing I could do for the Aizen cosplay is I could just dye my beard blonde. Like, it's not gonna be that long, but I mean that I guess that is something I could technically do.
Get clip-in extensions. Straighten it, get clip-in extensions, dye it blonde.
But also, I found a fucking ZZ Top wig that would work.
Yeah, I've seen some cosplays of people that have done him, and they do him to their knees, and then they walk around on their knees, and so he's like really small.
If my knee wasn't fucked, I would probably do that. But my God, my knees are fucked. So I don't have that luxury.
No.
But also it's like, do I shave my beard for Mashal, though? That is the question.
You need like a face bald cap.
Do they make a face bald cap? Is that an actual thing? But also, that would make my face look so fat. Like, if I could do that.
That would be so funny. I'm just imagining it like a like one of those like really sleek masks that they had during COVID. And then there's just like a little mouth hole that's cut out of it.
Oh, but that's another thing too, is like, I'm also afraid to shave my beard because I don't know how fat my face is under all of this. And I don't want to know.
You kind of like test shave.
No, absolutely not. Because the last time I awkwardly sneezed while I was shaving my face and cut a chunk out, I was not a happy camper.
Photoshop it. I'm sure there's like a Snapchat filter that's like a me without a beard or something.
I mean, we have filtered photos of you with a beard.
We do. We have also pictures of me having painted a beard on.
That is true. Yeah. That is also very true.
That took way longer than I want to admit. And a lot of product. I ruined product to do that.
That's fine. It's perfectly fine.
It was more stubble than beard, but then I can't exactly create hair fiber. But it was definitely a shadow.
I mean, hey, if it works, it works. This is actually painted on. This is makeup. Like, every bit of this is VFX makeup. I've been lying to you for all of these years. I'm sorry. This is a lie.
Well, considering that my eyebrows are basically painted on, I believe it.
Oh, are you in for a rude awakening while we're at the convention and in Japan? It's just you're going to wake up and I'm actually bald.
You're just like no eyebrows, no beard, no hair.
And absolutely nothing. It's just egg.
That's funny.
Also, on the topic of egg, this is a very stupid segue, but just the one thing that made sense to me. So this is a straight fucking ripoff of like the daily challenges from Saitama's fucking everyday routine.
I thought that as well. Yeah.
100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups, 100 squats, and then fucking a 10-kilometer run. That's what Saitama did every day, and that's what this motherfucker has to do, or he has a penalty. Yeah. Like, oh my God. Like I said, stupid transition, but it's the only thing I could think of that actually worked for it. But oh my God, tell me, like, hey, you want to copy my homework? Just change a little bit. Don't worry, I got you. I'll change something, I promise.
If it was actually a tribute, though. Because there was a Goku tribute in Solo Leveling. Is that a spoiler chicken at?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Debatably spoiler. It's nothing for the plot. It's just a cool addition.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's a spoiler. I think it's fine. Who knows what it could actually be? Now, granted, like, is that a good way to get in shape? Yes. But also, eh.
It's also, I find that being somebody's starting point very funny. Because, like, 100 sit-ups, 100 push-ups, 100 squats, and a 10K run is not something that your average, everyday, non-active person can do from day one.
No. Now, granted, you could probably, I say probably, space it out enough to where you could probably do it in a day, but it's definitely not something an average person could do consecutively.
Yeah. Yeah, don't just do this as you're starting, like, I've never done fitness before, this is where I'm going. Like, no, you'll die.
No. But now, granted, if you did, like, 5 or so an hour, like, while you're awake, like, however many you would have to do per hour, I think it's easily doable, minus the run. Well, I mean, then again, so your 5 kilometers is, like, 3 miles, so 10 kilometers. Yeah, three so miles. Three... Or 10 it's kilometers, like, 6 miles, like, yeah. six or seven. So, yeah. I mean, it's doable, but you would have to space it out from the get-go. I think it also, like, what classifies as a run? Like, let's be honest here.
Well, scientifically speaking, a run is where both of your feet leave the ground during a stride. Like, walking is where both feet, at one point, both feet are on the ground. One foot comes off, then both feet are on the ground again. Jogging is where one foot is on the ground, then the other foot is on the ground, then the other foot. And then running is where one foot's on the ground, you kick up, no feet are on the ground, one foot's on the ground, you kick up. So that's, scientifically speaking, what the difference is. But I don't know if it cares that much.
I mean, that's also not how I run, though. Like, I use my feet, but I don't, like, kick up. Like, I kick out.
No, what I mean is that, like, no feet are on the ground and you're on the balls of your feet. Like, that's the difference, is that there is, at one point in your stride, no feet on the ground. With walking, 2 feet, then 1 foot, then 2 feet, then 1 foot. Like, that's the difference.
Maybe I run stupid then.
If you're running, at one point during your stride, you won't have any feet on the ground. And then you'll have 1 foot, and then you'll have no feet, and then you'll have 1 foot.
I don't... Like I said, maybe I run stupid because I
don't... No, you definitely run like that.
But again, I feel like the way I was taught to run, like, that doesn't track, but I am on.
Like, when you're running, I don't know if I'm explaining this well.
No, I get what you're saying, but I feel like that's not how I run.
It's how all humans run, unless you don't have 2 feet.
I mean, I definitely have 2 feet.
That's how we run. That's how we run. That's how we physically run. Let me try and explain it different way.
This don't track.
It does track. This is actual science.
Wait, hey, listen. You listen here, okay? What is the one class I always failed in school?
Okay, fine. It's not science. It's...
I swear sports. To God, if you say it's not science, it's biology. I swear to all
I
that
was
is
holy. Say physics, but that's still science. It's sports, okay? I guarantee you it's how you run. You are just not self-aware because this is physically how humans run.
Listen, I am already self-conscious about how I run, and it has now become more so. So
no,
thank you.
No, it's no, not it's, a self-conscious it, 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 thing.
It's too late. This is all I'm
okay,
going to be able to
run?
Focus on while I don't know how to explain it, but this is 100% taking over my life now. Thank you.
I guarantee that you are seeing yourself differently from how you physically run, because that is how you physically run.
Well, now this is all I will be able to see, so thank you.
That's how humans run. That is, we are bipedal. That is how we run.
What does bipedal mean?
Two legs. We stand on two legs. We have two bipedal legs. Two legs.
Okay. At this point, I'm just giving you shit.
You take a video of yourself sprinting, you will see. At one point, neither of your feet will touch the ground. Then one of them will touch the ground to kick you back off again when neither of your feet will touch the ground. And then the other foot will come down.
Okay, I don't even like taking photos of myself. I'm not taking a video of me running.
That's still how you run, though. Regardless of whether or not you video it. It's how you run.
Again, I don't doubt this. And I'm not telling you that you're wrong. It's just I feel as if this is not how I run. And again, I am an idiot who has failed every science class he's ever taken, namely due to the fact that I never wanted to do my homework, but that is besides the point. However, I don't know. I've never paid attention to how I run, but I feel like how I was taught to run, it doesn't track, because I had to be taught how to run properly, because I've apparently been running wrong my whole life.
Okay, how do you run?
I don't know how to explain.
Because this has nothing to do with technique. This is just how you go from, like, this isn't like, oh, my feet are turned in or my knees are up too high. Like, this is just like when you are running, at one point neither of your feet are touching the ground. That's the definition of running.
Okay. You know what?
I believe our hotel in Edmonton has a gym. You can just come to me with at the gym one day, and you can see how my running looks. We'll just do that. If we remember, I'm not going to remember this by the time that actually comes around.
I'm not either, but I'm wondering if I'm not explaining it properly.
No, I 100% 100% get what
it's
you're saying.
It's not a thing about like technique. This is just the physicality of running.
Well, again, I could be very wrong. I don't know. It's just to me, it doesn't seem like how I, Bradley Bradford Bartholomew Guerin III, run.
I promise you, this is going to sound really mean, but I promise you, you're not that special. You don't run differently from the rest of the entire human race. I promise you that.
How dare you crush my brittle, soft feelings like that? I thought I was special. And I thought I was such a unique individual, and you have decided to come through and just shit all over my birthday party. Thank you.
It's not something to be self-conscious about, because if you have two legs and can run, you run like this. Like, there's nothing to be self-conscious about. You can't not run like this. This is the definition of running. If you can't do this, you can't run. Like, that's it. This is what running is. So you're being like, oh, I can't do that. You're just saying you can't run. That's it. If you can't run, that's fine, but that's a different thing to being like, oh no, I run different. No, you don't.
We will come back to this in August. Maybe. This is gonna be a whole vlog while we're in Edmonton. How do run? How run do? I don't understand. This is
it's so funny to me. They go like, no, I'm different. And I'm like, no, dude, like that's being like, oh no, I can't write because I write a different language. No, it's still writing. Like, you can write. If you can put a pen to paper and make squiggles, you're writing. Like, it's fine.
I don't know. It's just this is something that I have.
I'm thoroughly amused that you're like, nah, I'm self-conscious because I think I run weird from the entire human race. I'm like, I promise you don't. I promise.
And again, like I'm legitimately not self-conscious. Like at the end of all this, this is simply a bit. Like I genuinely do not care how I run. It's just in my head, it seems like I understand what you're saying, but it's also like, I feel like for me as an individual, it seems wrong, but I don't care to try to figure out whether or not it's wrong. I am probably wrong. I've said that since the beginning we got off on this tangent. Like I probably am wrong. It's just in my brain, it seems like for me, you're wrong as me as an individual, like for me. But also it's like you said, I am not a special little snowflake. I am like every other human being. But in my brain, it's like, no, that's not how this works.
Yeah. One day you're going to run and you're going to be like, huh, no, I really do run like the rest of the human race. And then you're just going to move on.
But once I'm in good enough shape to actually run, we will test this. We will test this theory.
I'm down, but this is really funny. Just the idea of being like, no, I run different. I don't run like that.
Like I said, we'll put this theory to the test whenever we actually meet up in Canada. Should we remember? And here's the thing, like, you and I will probably not have this conversation again. Like, this is going to be in the furthest reaches from our brain until we get to the hotel. And then we're going to walk past the gym. And I'm just going to slowly just remember that time
get the drink.
Where you said I'm not special.
we're gonna find out. Oh dear God, this has been like a 15 minute tangent and I have no clue whether or not it's going to be left in. I know for the YouTube it's not getting left in, but it's like because of how long of a tangent it is, I was very curious on whether or not it gets left in.
It's really funny. I might cut it down a bit, but it's funny. Okay, solo leveling. Back to the topic at hand. Background.
All right. So it is a manhwa or a Korean webtoon. I don't know how to do Korean pronunciation, so forgive me if this is fucked up, but I believe the author is Chu Gong.
Okay.
I very well could be wrong. I have absolutely zero clue. It began publication in July of 2016 and ran through December of 2021. For a total of 14 volumes. The manga is currently being, like a physical manga, is being published. Actually, it's currently done now too, at least in other places other than America, with a total of 9 physical volumes. And the anime was directed by Shunsuke Nakashige. Sure. And it ran from January to March of 2024 for a total of 12 episodes. However, it has already been greenlit for a second season that will be airing later this year. Although, so here's an anime thing that I don't understand. So if each season is only 12 episodes and it releases in the same year, can you call that a second season, or would you call that technically a second core?
It depends. I feel like this is a second season because it wasn't already planned that way, or at least it wasn't planned for us that way. Like, we didn't know that it was coming out this year until recently. So I feel like if it was already planned to be split, then core one and core two with a split intermission. But because this was approved for a second, I would consider it another season.
But it's the fact that it's airing in the same year. Like, it's coming out in the fall. So, even if it aired in winter of next year, I would consider it a second season. But since it's releasing in the same year, every part of me is just like, nah, second core.
I can see that as well, because where the storyline took it, it does kind of feel like it's going to be a continuation of the first season as opposed to a new whole season. Like, it's the way that the story ended off, there's still so much to be fulfilled that it's not like starting a new story or a new chapter of the story. It's really continuing everything from the first core, I would say.
Yeah,
but yeah, I know it, I feel like it's debatable for sure.
Yeah, it's just I feel like it left off on, well, I mean, it's to the point to where if for some reason the show got canceled after the first season, like, you do get a sense of finality with it. But at the same time, I'm still left with more questions than answers.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know. Like, it's very odd. It's just, again, for me, it feels more like a second core rather than a second season. But it is what it is, especially since they were 12 episodes. I feel like that's another thing that makes it feel like more of a second core. Because, again, it was only 12 episodes, and they fucking delayed it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on the feeling like a second core from the content-wise, because I was surprised that it was one core when I was watching it. Like, it kept feeling like a two-core anime with the pacing and the lack of resolution for a lot of really big key plot points. It felt very two-core-esque. And it was one of those ones where I was like, oh, I wonder if it's going to be, because, like, I don't always check how many episodes things are when I'm watching them for the podcast. I assumed it was going to be around the 12 episode mark, but sometimes you get ones that are like 13 or 14 episodes. And I was getting to the point where I was like, oh, I wonder if they're going to like cram, wrap up like all of these thoughts in the last couple episodes. And I'm going to be like, oh, this is, the pacing was really off throughout. But then ended it at the 12 episodes. And I was like, huh, you know, that feels half finished. So it content wise feels like two core, but because it wasn't guaranteed for a second season core, I feel like that way makes me lean towards it being a second season. But it doesn't really matter at the end of the day.
No, it really doesn't. It's just like my brain was like, I feel like this is a point I should bring up because it's, you know, it's dumb the way that they're doing it. But I don't know. At the end of the day, it is what it is. It's a second season. It's just brain is like, no, second core.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, A1 Pictures was the studio, and some other things that they have done are Sword Art Online, Fairy Tale, which we spoke about earlier. Although if you're listening to this on YouTube, then you don't get to hear that conversation.
Nope, you gotta go seek it out on audio only platforms. But do please finish it in YouTube land, because you know we need those retention numbers. Thank you, especially for the YouTube watchers. Foreheads, smooches. God, as much as I've been ASMRing into the microphone today, I apologize.
Nah, it's fine. Darling of the Franxx, they also did one that we covered on the podcast. Love is Hard. Watakoi, Love is Hard for an Otaku. We covered that one.
Also, let's talk about one of our favorites that we have run across in Licorice Recoil.
Grimgar of Ash and Fantasy, which was one that I seriously debated cosplaying from at one point. It's a isekai. We haven't covered it here. It's isekai, kind of on the same lines as sort of online video game-esque. Mashal.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Mashal. We got to cover the second season of that soon.
Yeah. Kaguya-sama. Did I say Kaguya-sama?
No, but Kaguya-sama is very important.
Kaguya-sama. A1 Pictures have done so much, and this is consistent with their work.
Well.
Are you going to get into CGI?
No, you know, I wasn't even going to go into the CGI so much as, you know, the delays. But we'll get into that, because I have bones to pick with this show, but we'll get into it whenever we actually get into the discussion.
Yeah, but before we get into that, you can find Solo Leveling on Crunchyroll, so, or some regions of Netflix. So depending on whether or not you have a VPN, or if you're in those places, check it out on Netflix. I was looking at my sticky notes when I should be looking at my notebook. My anime list voted.
Maths.
Right. Voted this an 8.33 out of 10. Anime Planet gave it a 4.4 out of 5, which is an 8.8 out of 10, giving it an average score of 8.57 out of 10 across platforms. The drop rate is a very nice 2.09, which is just kind of what I was expecting, around that 1-2% mark. It's literally everywhere with a huge fan base. It's so up everybody's alley for just being a video game style. It's just fun. It's fun and dumb with violence and action scenes and big monsters, and it hits all nerdy people's kind of tickle me fancy. I don't know if that made any sense.
No, it 100% did.
I also put 2.09 out of 10 as opposed to percent in my notes, but it's definitely a percent, not out of 10.
I mean, I guess at that point you could have just added a zero on the end of it. Then it could have been, you know, 2.09 out of 100, because that is 2.09%.
Yeah. Instead, I scribbled it out and wrote percent.
Don't worry, I got you.
Yes. Brad needs to talk about the dub. I have a note.
Yes. Oh, I have other dubs to talk about too, because I completely forgot about it. I haven't talked about it in the past 2 fucking weeks.
Yeah, I put a little note on my notebook, and I was like, I'll put it there, and we'll see if we get to it. We did. It worked.
I honestly, well, no, I would have, because I've seen the dub of this. I've seen the sub and the dub of the show fully to completion. And then, of course, I've seen the last episode. A certain scene out of the last episode dubbed several times because everybody's fucking talking about it on TikTok. But we'll get to that whenever we get there. So going back to our other topics first, because I got to get it out. Frieren and Apothecary Diaries, very good dubs. Very pleased with how those have turned out. And for the dub of this show as well, like, I am very impressed with what Alex Lay has put himself through to do Sung Jin-woo. Oh boy, like, he followed in the Japanese voice actor's steps to the point to where they both coughed up blood from what they put themselves through for this show. So big props.
Yeah.
Also, Alex Lay he was the dub actor for Sung Jin-woo throughout the entire thing. However, his vocal distinction from Jin-woo in the beginning of the show to the end are two very different inflections of vocals. Like, he captured the transition from how he was in the beginning of the show to the end, to the point to where people thought like they had casted two different actors. Mm. Like, so many people were asking, like, oh, who did the original voice acting? Same dude the entire time. Mm. So, major props.
Yeah, no, I thought the voice acting was incredible throughout the whole show from everyone. I think across the board, the voice acting was very good. I think actually sound design across the show was incredibly brilliant. There were some moments where they were using sound effects that I noticed because of how fantastic they were. Specifically, there's a scene where there are two members. I'm going to be very vague about the scene and who's in it, to just because we're not in spoiler territory yet. So there's two people sitting in a cafe having a discussion. And in that moment, it's a tense kind of conversation and quite a dramatic scene. And there's no like music or anything happening. It's just the voice actors. And then the rustling of clothing was put mm-hmm. in there. So whenever they like move their arm and their arm like their sleeve brushes against the rest of their shirt, the torso part of their shirt, you can hear that. And I didn't notice when I was watching on my laptop because I didn't have headphones in. But I watched a couple of episodes here with my Razer over-the-ear headphones, and I noticed it. And it was so good. So, so, so good. And that's across the board with those little snippets of sound design. None of them were distracting, except for one, and I'll get into that. All of them were so atmospheric, well-placed, perfectly timed, and fantastic choices. Like, there's a moment where one higher up CEO kind of dude is typing away on a laptop, and the audio of the keys clacking is definitely laptop keys. Like, they sounded specifically like a MacBook keys laptop. Mm. That kind of thing, phenomenal. The one I would say that wasn't great, but I understand why, and it's consistent across the board for media in general, is whenever Sung was walking into a certain area where there was like a concrete or a like a road kind of flooring. He was often wearing trainers or sneakers or whatever you call them from wherever you are. And the shoe sound sounded like boots with a heavy heel. I get why. They're trying to make it impactful. They're trying to make it echo throughout the environment. They want to make it more atmospheric. Trainers don't really make much of a noise. But that's the only one that didn't match. And it didn't really matter because it was a purposeful decision to shape the atmospherics.
Yeah. I feel like that's just kind of a common thing in general, because trainers, when they do make noise, they squeak. And I feel like that takes out more than it adds. So mm-hmm. I understand like having the like boot or, you know, like dress shoe on a hard floor type sound with the mm-hmm. actual like hard hitting or clacking sound, because it, for one, it sounds more natural. Like, it doesn't suit the environment, but it's what you think of whenever you think of footstep sounds.
Yeah. I would like to see things more where it's like a gravel crunch or mm-hmm. just scuffing noises, I think could be used. And I definitely think that the squeaks of trainers would be fantastic for comedic purposes. So I do want to see more variants on specifically footstep noises within anime in general. But this one, I think, was very purposeful in the fact that they wanted an echoey sound to create the environment that they wanted.
Yeah. Now, I will say too, with the sound design and especially the overall score of the show, they did incredibly well with the score. The OP and the ED, like, they fit the show, but they're not memorable to me. However, the score from the episode inside the spider cave during that one scene, so good. Like, that, the first time I heard that, like, that gave me chills with the way that that played over that whole scene. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my goodness, that was so good.
Yeah. Yeah, they did a phenomenal job at enhancing specific emotions that they were trying to make you to feel. and the pieces of music that they chose had the same level of depth. A lot of the time when you're watching the show, there is one emotion that you're feeling, but then there's another underlying emotion. And they were very good at matching those complicated feelings that as viewers we're feeling with pieces of music that have those themes throughout. So there's like this upper, more prominent emotion that you're feeling, and then this more subtle underlying feeling. And it was the same in the music. There was this big continuous emotional theme throughout the music, and then you would just hear this level of like something being off or different underlying that within the music as well, and it aided in enhancing those complex emotions that the viewers were feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Or that at least I was feeling as a viewer.
The overall viewing experience for the show was incredible, minus I have some gripes with the pacing of the show. But we'll get into that whenever we actually start talking about the episodes, because I don't want to go off on a tangent and accidentally spoil something. So
fair enough. I'm trying to think of some of the graphics, the animation style. They had this like a graphic art, quick brushstroke, comic themed. Like it gave me comic a lot of the time for these specific scenes when they were changing emotion and something specific was happening. There was these very specific scenes where everything very clearly visually changes. I really liked that. I thought it was a really good juxtaposition from the regular art style. The regular art style is very pointy. Like they have the almost like older anime faces. Like they're very pointy rather than the rounder, squarer faces that we're seeing now. And so it was nice to have that difference.
Yeah, although I feel like, for one, that was a stylistic choice to go with the manhwa. Because they tried to copy the essence of the manhwa as much as possible.
Yeah.
But also with that, we were dealing with a lot more adults in the show. And a lot of the rounder facial styles that we've seen as of late, those are more used for like teenage and like young adult type things. So I get what you're saying, but then I also feel like we were dealing with a lot more adults in this, so that's also where a lot more of that came from too, maybe.
Yeah, I still feel like it's like their faces are very pointy, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing, it's just a note that I had that they don't fit in with the aesthetic of manga, of anime, sorry, that we're seeing generally. I haven't read the manhwa, so I don't know if it is matching the style, but I do know in manhwas in general, faces tend to be a little bit pointier, so that wouldn't surprise me that the like chibi feeling of anime that we normally see, especially from A1 Pictures, like I'm just thinking like Kaguya-sama or whatever, like you have some characters that are very chibi, but like you said, they're teenagers. But I don't think it necessarily it's a huge thing about them being teenagers or adults. I think it's because like his younger sister was still very pointy and she's a teenager.
So I feel like
it was probably leaning more towards the manhwa.
Yeah, I think that had a lot to do with it, too. And I feel like the reason manhwa might be a lot more like that as well is because since they have to keep up with a production style that involves color, it's probably easier to do straighter lines versus curves because it's, you know, especially with digital art tools nowadays, you use a drawing tablet. So, you know, like how line tools, like how all you do is draw a line and you hold it for a second and it'll fully snap it. To try to like keep that shape as straight or keep the curve as much as it has, but it'll clean it up. So I feel like it's just a lot easier to do it that way. That way it just keeps the lines cleaner and it speeds up production.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I agree. I think that's probably part of it. I don't think it's a bad thing that their faces were different. It was just something that I noticed. And because I know the studio, I was like, oh, this is different for them. So.
Yeah. Like I also noticed it, but I think it was just kind of a subtle notice of just because it is so different from things that we've been watching as of late. Because I think the only thing that's been kind of pointed like that we've watched recently was probably Chihaya. And it's still on the older side of things, too. Like, it's not one of the more, like, recently made shows that we've watched.
No, I agree with you about Chihaya. I'm just having another look at Jinwoo's profile pictures on my anime list, and I'm seeing that when he was younger, he was younger, but like not when he was in the beginning of the anime, He was very pointy, but because of his hairstyle, he was almost like a, like I don't know how to describe it. Like, he is a circle with a pointed chin. And then later, as the anime progresses and his hairstyle changes, his head shape changes, partially because of the hairstyle. But also, I think they do square out his jawline a little bit, which makes sense because of the way the story goes. Or at least they reveal it more because his hair is away from his jawline. I think that aided in his transformation being so dramatic. So I think it was a good choice that they went with it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I just noticed it. We just noticed it. That's all. It's just, there's no negative or positive to it. We just noticed it.
Yeah, no. Yeah, we're not sitting here shit talking it by any means.
I promise. We're not. Don't yell at us. Nah, you know, if we had something bad to say, we'd rip into it.
Oh, again, with what we're doing next week, I've already made our guests known that if we have issues with what we're watching, they will know.
Yeah, I do have some criticisms about this one coming later, but those are definitely past spoiler warning. Okay, so overview before we get into spoiler territory. Solo Leveling is about a early 20s, I'm assuming, bloke, Sung Jinwoo, who is supporting his sister. And he lives in this world, on Earth, obviously, where they're in Korea, I'd assume, as it's a Korean manhwa. There was a big catastrophe, I guess, and all of these, like, portals to another realm, dimension, whatever you want to call it, started opening up, and creatures started to come through, your goblins, that kind of thing, anything you would imagine in D&D, that kind of thing, start coming through these portals. And there's only this certain selection of the population that has the capability to fight them, because regular weapons do not do anything to them. So you have to have this kind of like magic essence, this aura, whatever you want to call it, to be able to actually cause damage to these creatures. And these portals stay open for like, I think it's like a week they're open for. And then if they don't go in and defeat the dungeon effectively within that week, then everything that's in that dungeon just breaks free from that portal and can create havoc on Earth. So then this group of hunters, this population of people that have this special magic that allows them to be able to kill these creatures, have started to be hired for the jobs to go into these dungeons before they break open, to kill everything inside of them, close out the dungeons. But also, everything that's inside of those dungeons is like new supplies to Earth. And there's a lot of things to do with like energy. You could find things that like help with energy and like weapon supplies, like things that are valuable as resources are in these dungeons. And so hunters get paid effectively, not just like by going in them, getting all of this shit that they can then sell. So it's a very dangerous job, but it's a high profit job. However, there are classes of hunters and you are ranked and you can't ever increase your magic essence. Like the magic essence that you have, I don't actually remember what it's legit called, so I'm calling it magic essence. I'm aware that's not what it actually is. but whatever your magic essence level is, that cannot be altered. So you have your awakening, you realize that you're a hunter, and you get ranked as a class. That class can never change. You can get stronger by like working out, but you can't get stronger to be able to defeat higher classes of monsters. So there's also this level of hierarchy that's created because, you know, the government will go and they'll see a dungeon is like, oh, this is a, you know, a B-class dungeon. So only B-class hunters and above can defeat this dungeon. Our main character is an E-class, which is the lowest class. So yeah, that's kind of the overview. It's about him trying to support his sister, making friends with people, dealing with the social hierarchy of everything. And then obviously it's a story, so a big twist happens, and him dealing with that big twist and all of the trauma, honestly, that comes with having such a dangerous job. I don't know if I mentioned what it's rated, but it is definitely rated an R or 17 plus, very reasonably. Please be aware that there is strong violence, profanity, destruction, death, and questionable morals throughout the show.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah, okay, so now officially back to the spoiler chicken hats.
But yeah, so gripes, criticisms, all the shit. The pacing for this for a week to week watcher was fucking bullshit.
I bet. Yeah.
Especially those first three episodes. Oh my fucking God. Mm-hmm. Why? I would have been happier if they had pulled an Oshinoko and gave us those three episodes as a feature length film.
Yeah.
Because having to wait week to week for as little shit as actually happened in those episodes were bullshit. Now, granted, I get it. Those are the most pivotal moments of the story, minus episode 12. Mm. But outside of that, like, this is supposed to be your pivotal moments. And all I could think of at the end of each episode was, are you fucking kidding me? Mm-hmm. That's it? That's what you stretched 20 minutes into, and then we had to wait, just especially between episodes 1 and 2. All of that could have been handled in an episode. Like, y'all drug that shit out very much.
Yeah.
So either one, give us a feature length episode, especially because as many times as this show was delayed,
plus episode 7.
Yeah. So, and that, we had this conversation back whenever the show was airing and about how much backlash the show faced, mm-hmm, because of having a recap episode. The production of the show was delayed twice already up to that point. And then, so you delay production twice, something that should have aired in the summer of last year. Actually, I think it was spring of last year. It was supposed to air in the spring. It got pushed back to fall, and then fall got pushed back to winter of this year, and then you still do a recap episode? Really?
On a 12 episode core. Like, it's not even like it was a two core season. It was a one core season. So you got 11 episodes.
No, it was still 12.
Was it?
Yeah, because it was technically episode 6.5.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
But still, regardless, 12 episodes, and you give us a recap episode. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I could forgive it if it wasn't delayed twice. But the fact that it was delayed twice so they could bring forth what they brought forward and then they still delivered that, no, pissed me off. Mm-hmm. But again, the pacing was just shit. Like, this show is bingeable, but I do not recommend having watched it week to week like I did. It was not a fun experience. Like, I was much happier watching it dubbed the second go around because I could literally binge the show. And it was just,
yeah.
It royally pissed me off with how slowly paced the show was. Every episode had like one big moment and everything else was slow. And that was it. It felt like I was watching a fucking episode of Dragon Ball Z. And that is not a good thing.
Yeah, I actually saw comments in the Crunchyroll comment section saying the same thing of people being like, oh, I envy people who can binge this, or I'm going to stop watching now and binge it later. Like, I saw lots of comments like that. So I think that's a fairly universal feeling. Along the same lines, issues that I had with the storyline, some moments were really well written. Some moments were very telly. What I mean by this is when you're watching a show or reading a book or something that a good writer can do is give you information without telling you the information. So it doesn't feel like you're reading an essay or you're getting a lecture. They did this quite well in the first episode with the technique of there's somebody else new. So in the first episode, we're introduced to Jinwoo by another character telling the guy who's got a new baby who Jinwoo is. He's like, oh, who's that guy? And so we're told who Jinwoo is. We're given his explanation, all of his basic backstory, who we need to know he is as a character, by the technique of being like, oh, I'm new, please share information with me. That also shares information with us, the viewer, right? Really solid technique used very commonly.
Yep.
On the episode after the recap, though, there's a couple scenes where they're trying to basically catch us up to date on more of the, I think it's like the political side of things. Like, there's a scene in the car, or like it's more, they're giving quite complicated information. It's very, very telly. They spend about 5 minutes of having a conversation between two characters where one character is literally silent, just getting a lecture. And we are as well as viewers. It was very boring. Not gonna lie. I didn't give a shit about any of the information that they were telling us about. And I completely zoned out. I was out. And the character that was learning this information wasn't even learning it for the first time. It was a recap for them. Like, it wasn't well done. It was just very, okay, here's shit you need to know, so I'm going to tell you the shit that you need to know. And I don't know if that's how it is in the original source, but any good writer should be able to give you information without lecturing you. That felt very lectury. And there were a couple other moments in the show where I got that same feeling too. So I have an actual issue with the biggest issue that I have is that I've seen them use techniques where they did it well. So when I see them then do it wrong and do it poorly, not necessarily wrong, it's art, it's subjective, but when I see them do it, in my opinion, poorly, I get frustrated because I know they're capable of doing it better.
I mean, it's one of those things of rather than a lecture, like I would much rather have shots of them sitting at a desk and like having the monologue like as a thought.
Yeah.
Because then it comes across more as, like, it comes across better that way than just having one character there sit silently for like a discussion. Mm. Whenever it's no discussion, it's just an exposition dump. And I don't like exposition dumps in my show. No. Like make it natural, and having it as a thought is natural.
Yeah.
Because again, it just makes for a better story beat, in my opinion.
I agree. And I think it can be used in conjunction. This complaint, I don't really know how to call it, this criticism, can be used in conjunction with yours about the plot being so strangely paced. Because if the plot is paced well, these explanations are broken up. So it's not one big lump sum when you realize, oh shit, I need to get across all this information to move the story across. It's been trickled in throughout all of the previous episodes to where you don't even notice that you're learning all of these different aspects about the world. It's just slowly building the world as you go. And then you can seamlessly move into the next transition of the storyline. Instead, it felt like we're doing our thing and then, oh shit, I need to be able to move on to the next plot point. So I'm going to give you all the information that you need for the plot point, and then we can keep going. And it was like, it felt like a hurdle. You had to get over this hurdle in the story to be able to get to the good shit. I don't want hurdles in my story. I want a seamless run.
Well, and I mean, it's one of those things of, like, I get it, because you do it because you're trying to appeal to a casual audience.
Yeah.
But at the same time, audiences aren't stupid. Mm-hmm. So that's a thing. But I'll put it to you like this. I skipped all of those scenes the mm-hmm. second time through. Like, I gave no fucks. I was like, just let me have all of the action and all of the important shit. None of this is important.
Yeah. And I think it's especially prevalent for us right now, because the last episode that we recorded was Apothecary Diaries, which had a fantastic way of giving us these mini mysteries that then added up to this overarching plot point line that we were so surprised by, because we were learning all these things about the world that we didn't realize, and then all of a sudden they're all wrapped up in this big thing, and it was so good, and it was so well paced, and it was staggered really well, and these little mysteries started us off to get us hooked in the show. They were like one scene, one mystery happened in one episode, resolution in one episode, and then that continued for a couple of episodes until you're completely hooked on the story to get your casual viewers hooked in. And then all of a sudden, all of those scenes add up to something much bigger and more important. That was such a fantastic example of good writing, that when we get this in comparison, it felt even worse than I think it would have had we just watched this casually. More so. Mm-hmm. I mean, you watched it week to week, but we did literally discuss it only a few days ago, so.
Yeah. Well, again, it's one of those things of, like, is it a great story? Yes. Like, as a whole,
yeah,
the story is captivating. Like, the story of Jin Woo is fascinating.
Agreed.
And I love it for that. It's mm-hmm. the rest of the world that I could give two fucks about. Like, yeah. Do I care about, like, who all the rest of these S-rank hunters are? Yes, because they left that up as a nice little mystery snippet.
Yeah.
Like, you've seen two or three of them, and that's it. But it's just, if they had sprinkled things better rather than giving like longer exposition dumps, and I get it, you do shit like that to fill airtime.
Yeah.
But there are better ways to go about filling airtime than presenting it in a way to where it bored me to tears. Like, I should not have been able to watch through that the second time as quickly as I did, because I was just skipping all of those scenes.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that the actual premise of the story is really good. The characters are really captivating. And The voice actors did a phenomenal job of completely making them so very believable as characters. I love that they're not, you know, that Jinwoo isn't a necessarily completely pure-hearted protagonist. I think protagonists with complicated streaks to them are far more interesting than, you know, your Deku, you know?
Well, and I mean, that's the thing. I feel like Jinwoo is so relatable. Mm-hmm. Because I legitimately feel like if I were in his shoes, that's probably the route that I would have taken too. Mm-hmm. Like, it's relatable because it's like, okay, like I survived this really traumatic event. And if I don't follow through with what the system says, then I'm going to die mm-hmm. again. Mm-hmm. And that's not something that I want to experience, because what dude went through was fucking awful.
Yeah.
You know, he has the ability to kind of right the wrongs and the injustice of the world and like right all the shit that was done to him. And that's relatable because that's something that a lot of people would actually kill for an opportunity to do. Mm-hmm. Because if you're told your whole life of, hey, you can do nothing, you will accomplish nothing, like you are literally named the weakest hunter of all mankind. Mm. And then you have the ability to actually prove all of those people wrong. Like, I, as someone who thrives off of fuck you energy, that is like, this show is all about fuck you energy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that they dove into the aspect of like sketchy people in the dungeons. I love that they had this kill or be killed theme throughout the storyline. And I think that that really elevated this show from being a teen audience to being an adult audience, which was clearly mm-hmm. their target. I mean, it's rated R, like it's late teens to adults. And I think that the main thing that captivates that audience and makes it so adult content wise is that aspect of kill or be killed. We've left the demons behind now, the monsters, the whatever you want to call them, gremlins, I don't give a shit. And we've gone into bad humans, bad people, that even if you don't agree with things like the death penalty or whatever it is you where you morally stand, in that situation, it's you die or they die. So how strong are your survival instincts? Like, yeah. It's you've gone back to caveman brain in that instance. I think that is what elevated it to being an adult show.
I agree. Plus, as adults, we realize life is not black and white. Like, there is no such thing as black and white in the real world. It's always living in a gray area of, you know, this, that, or the other. And that's sometimes you make decisions that are right. Sometimes you make decisions that are wrong. But at the end of the day, that's what makes us humans. And so that is a great mark of good storytelling is, you know, having a person who is in, you know, those life or death situations have to make that decision of, am I willing to fight to survive, or am I just going to roll over and die?
Yeah.
So it's fascinating. Like, I love dives into the human psyche like this, because it's absolutely fascinating, because it's like we've talked about with things like A Silent Voice, where it perfectly portrays kids being assholes, because kids are assholes.
Yeah.
Like, if you're even slightly different from, you know, everyone else, then you're going to be heavily bullied. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, that's just psychology of kids, because they don't understand emotions and they don't understand those subtle differences. And so they have a tendency to group up and be assholes. And as adults, we are faced every day with, you know, those decisions of, do I do this or do I do that? And are there going to be consequences? Sure, but you still have to make the call that you think is right. Mm. And so I love explorations into that kind of stuff. And it leads to more compelling storytelling, because it makes you think, okay, what would I do in this situation?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I agree that the story is a good story. I think it was told poorly in areas. And that frustrates me, because when you're given good material with a studio as large as this, with the productions that they have released, I'm frustrated that they didn't do a better job of telling this really good story. And the things that are bugging me are fairly basic writing practices.
I feel like if all they did was fix the pacing, mm-hmm. and you know, your gripes and complaints also come down to pacing as well. So if they fix the pacing, I could easily give the show a 9.5 or a 10 out of 10, like without a shadow of a doubt, mm-hmm. because it hits every beat of storytelling that I want out of a shonen.
Yeah.
And I'll go ahead and say it. If that fight in episode 12 were longer, if that fight with Igris were longer, that would take my fucking favorite fight of all time, mm-hmm. like in all of anime, because that was so beautifully animated. Like, that was fluid. Everything I could have wanted out of a fight, I absolutely loved that. It was just short, which I get it. Like, that was part of the whole storytelling, as dude was fucking exhausted after having been in that dungeon for so long, and he couldn't heal, and he couldn't do this, that, or the other. So I have no quarrels with that whatsoever. But that fight was incredible. Mm-hmm. And the exposition dumps and those first three episodes, like, if you fix the pacing on that, again, like, this would be one of my favorite new gen shows of all time.
Yeah.
It's just, I feel like my experience of this was tainted because of those first three episodes and just the overall pacing. Like, if I could have binged this from start to finish, and I realize it's my fault because I'm the asshole here that watches most things week to week. So I can.
They're releasing it week to week. It should be good week to week and bingeable. That's a fair
criticism. Yeah. And so that's, but again, I feel like if I binge this week to week from the get go, I probably would have had a better time with it. Like, the exposition dumps, I could probably have glossed over because I was so fascinated with the world. Like, I wanted to learn more.
I did too. I still genuinely zoned out during them.
And I wonder if that's just an ADHD thing for us as well. Like, I don't know, but from a week to week perspective, like I did not have a good time with this. Like, I enjoyed the actiony bits, and I cannot speak for how I would have felt had, you know, I binged it again, binging back through it the second time in English. I loved it, but I also skipped all the exposition bits because I knew everything at that point.
Yeah,
I knew the entire story leading up to that. So therefore, fuck the extra bullshit. Let me get back to the shit that I actually cared about, because the fight scenes were incredible. Like, Jinwoo and his journey were incredible. Like, I loved everything except for just the shitty pacing of the first three episodes and all the exposition, which is why I skipped all of that the second watch through.
Speaking of that fight scene, though, one of the things I did want to talk about was the perfectly timed and constructed flashback to the family before the death blow. Like, that was chef's kiss, gorgeous. Loved that. Mm-hmm. Like, way to pull on my heartstrings and make me want to literally cry. Like, so good. And then to turn that around and have another freaking battle segment after that, so good. Loved that.
Mm-hmm.
And that, again, is proof that they can pace well and they can write well, because that was perfect.
Yeah. And again, just the overall pacing of the fights and everything was incredibly well done, too. Because it's, you know that they're not going to kill dude off after they tried to kill him in the first episode. Yeah. So I you know, he's going to overcome adversity and he's going to, you know, do all of these things, this, that, or the other. And you know what? I don't care. I'm a shonen kid at heart. Like, give me the good fights, and I'm so here for it.
Yeah, but still scare me a little. And that did. That, because I love a show where I'm like, okay, yeah, but he's the hero, so he's fine. But still, when you add in those moments of like, yeah, but we're giving the family flashback, and the PTSD of ReZero, you get those moments of like, is he going to die again? Like, you know he's going to be fine in the end. But you don't know what he's going to go through until he gets to be fine again. So that level of like adding in that emotional tug that they put in there made me think, oh shit, is he going to die here? And then we're going to have another like respawn point.
But I mean, especially in episode 12, whenever like he's confronted with his, you know, past self, Dory's like looking down on him and is like, hey, you're still weak. Like, you and I are still the same person. You think you're special because you got this special ability to level up? He's like, no, you're still a weak little bitch.
Yeah.
Like me, and there's nothing you can do about it. And it even drove it home, because his escape of being able to go to the penalty zone, because he was going to die otherwise. And it's like, hey, we're going to meet again. the only reason you're surviving is because the system's letting you be a little bitch. So he's like, we will meet again. And I'm like, I love that, because it's still such a beautiful character flaw of, you know, although that's portrayed as like his younger self, like that's still his self-doubt manifesting as like a physical representation. So well done. But even the fights with, you know, that B rank hunter that had the stealth skills and like all of that, like that was very well done of like, hey, here are these insurmountable odds. Oh, wait, never mind. It's not actually insurmountable. It's just I'm fucking with you because you're being a dick to all these other people. And going back to, you know, the boss fight in the spider cave. Mm. Oh, boy, that was fucking. I cannot speak highly enough over. And again, that's going back to the whole morally gray areas of whatever happens in the dungeons stays in the dungeons. Mm-hmm. And so if that were a society like what we lived in today, there would legitimately be parties like that of people that would, you know, bring in extras, let them, you know, do all the heavy lifting. They would kill them and then they would get their split. Like that's legitimately something that would happen. And so you have a moment of like, hey, y'all fucked up because y'all just so happened to choose the wrong motherfucker to try to pick a fight with. And it's, and it was just, oh, the way it was so well done, because you had him like questioning his own sanity of after he killed the first dude, he's like, I just killed a person and I feel nothing, but the system is still telling me to kill all the rest of them or I'm going to die. Yeah. So he does.
Yeah.
And so it was just, oh, it was so good. And that background track, oh my God, that is one of my favorite fight scenes, period, just because of that track. Like if that had been backed with something else, probably wouldn't have been as good. But that was just a beautiful bit of storytelling that just had a culmination of so many different things going for it that it was just a penultimate moment of just masterclass storytelling.
Yeah. I mean, with that fight, he's got a thing for stabbing eyeballs, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But one thing I did want to mention when you were talking about the final fight scene with him seeing his younger self again is that really, again, hammers home this bias that's been established by the system. And we don't know the cause for that bias yet. So that's probably the biggest thing that I am like intrigued about for this second core and or second season, whatever you want to call it, is obviously there's a lot more stuff going on with like the island and he's now got an S-class older brother dude after him. And like, there's a whole bunch of other stuff that's happening, but I'm really intrigued about this system that has this bias against him.
Well, and so, I mean, the thing about it is, I don't know if I could even technically call it a bias because they foreshadowed it before he even went into the dungeon. And honestly, I figured that was going to be the case of till literally right before he walked into the dungeon, he's like, oh, I haven't done my penalty quest. Oh, well, I'll do it after the fact. And I was like, nope. I knew from the moment it said that, I was like, your ass is about to die and you're going to get sent to the penalty zone instead. And especially whenever he gets in and it's like, oh, hey, you can't regenerate, use potions or anything like that. I was like, that's his out. That is 100% his out.
It wasn't subtle.
And no, it was not. So I don't think that was a system thing necessarily, just because it established the penalty zone early on. Mm. So it seems like it's just like a natural part of it. But the fact that they foreshadowed it like that, I was like, nah. Now, granted, he like in his subconscious, he felt like he was bitching out about it because he failed to do what he wanted to do. So the system is giving him an out. But I think from a storytelling perspective, no, it was literally just foreshadowing. But we watch enough anime to where we saw the foreshadowing. It's like y'all are bitching out.
Yeah.
On this, because you can't, like, they kind of wrote themselves into a hole of, you know, he can't heal or he can't do any of the rest of this, so he just has to deal with it. And it's like, no, either you didn't want to come up with something better or that was literally the only thing you could do because you established the rules. You're writing this story. You could have come up with anything else.
Yeah, in but a mom logo, that would have been like a sick reveal. Like, I can imagine like scrolling past it just like really quickly and just seeing it and like not really registering it, and then it coming back around when you're because like you're just scrolling, you're just going real fast, and you don't even really give a shit about what you're reading. And then all of a sudden, you're like, oh shit! Like, I remember. Like, that would have been sick in the mom logo.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you're reading it week to week or month to month or however, like, those chapters were dropping, mm-hmm. like, your ass would have long forgot about the fact that he didn't do his fucking penalty thing that day. Like, 100% would have forgotten about it.
Yeah.
And so then it's like, oh, shit, he might actually die. And then it cuts to a panel of the penalty zone thing about to tick down, and it's like, oh, you sons of bitches.
Yeah, I can imagine myself reading that and being like, oh fuck, that's so cool. In the anime, it did come across a little bit obvious, but again, both you and I have watched so much anime and critiqued so much anime that I feel like we're also looking at things with a magnifying glass, so it might not have been obvious to the average viewer, but I don't feel like it was exactly subtle foreshadowing.
Yeah, and by the time at that point in the story, everybody's just like, ooh, because you got through the whole fight with Igris, and then you, especially if you were a manga reader, the only thing people went into the season caring about was, for one, the smiling statue, because that was creepy as fuck.
Oh, yeah.
But then, two, the Arise mm-hmm. scene. Like, that was all, like, people were chomping at the bit.
Oh, yeah.
For that scene. And then, let's talk about, we've talked a lot about how anime communities are toxic. Mm-hmm. And these people were legitimately threatening, like, death threats, shit ton of death threats to the dub actor to not fuck up the Arise scene. Dude. So much so to where did you see him call people out on TikTok? Like, he made a TikTok about how, like, the creative freedom that he was given. You remember the monologue that was had with whenever he was fighting the snake boss in the subway? Mm-hmm. So he wrote his own monologue for that,
right,
for the dub. Mm-hmm. And so he talked about that, and he's like, I have a lot more creative freedom than y'all think. So instead of, you know, giving you the Arise that you so want, I could just change it to something like, I don't know, wake up.
Yeah.
Or wakey wakey. And just like, he went off on a tangent. So he's like, let me do what I do, and I can promise you, like, it'll be okay. Again, it's one of the most iconic scenes in the entire manhwa, so therefore, like, people have high expectations, and it lived up mm-hmm. to all expectations. In fact, I dare say the dub for that scene was better than the sub, just because of, like, how much more weight that Arise carried with it than Okiro. Mm. Like, it felt better. Like, that dub scene just had just so much more oomph to it.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, don't send death threats to anybody. Like, you're fucking weird if you do that. You're weird, and I'm calling you out on it for being weird, and not the good kind of weird, the weird kind of weird that needs to sit in a corner and think about their actions, because that's fucking rude. Don't do that.
Yeah, go sit on a cactus.
Yeah. But
especially, you know, like, these are people that are doing this for a job.
They go home and they clock out and they're done with their day, and they don't want to go on their socials and see people sending them death threats. That's disgusting. And I genuinely think there should be legal action taken against people that send death threats. Like, I do not think that this should be something that is glossed over as it is in society. That is a danger. And you should be able to get, like, I don't know, restraining orders against people that send that shit, because that is disgusting. Don't do that.
Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things, like, as voice actors, I could not have done that any better. Mm. Like, I also realize, like, I have no known publications of shit, but I can 100% sit here and tell you I couldn't have done that better. Like, absolutely not. I could not have. Mm. And you know what? Neither can the people that were sending the fucking death threats.
No.
So sit your ass down and just enjoy the content, because you know what? You sat through it. You watched it.
Yeah.
So, you know what? Fuck off. Go sit on a cactus. Stop being a little bitch and just enjoy the content that you're obviously watching anyway. So just enjoy the entertainment, or don't fucking watch it.
Yeah, and something that I think needs to be kept in mind is that nobody knows what's going on inside your head. So if you read this manga with whatever voice that you have in your head for it, and then the voice actors don't do that voice, I'm sorry, they've never been inside your head. They do not know what that character sounds like to you. And guess what? Also, all of the other people who read this manhwa have a different voice inside their head for that character. So how is a voice actor supposed to do an individual voice for everybody that's ever read the manhwa and projected it with a voice? I read everything in my own voice. Everything. Every character ever read, I read in my own voice. So, what, you want All Out to sound like me? All Out? All Might? All Out? what is All Out? Where did that come from? All Might is where
it's the LGBTQ fucking My Hero story.
Out and proud. All Out and proud. Happy Pride.
It's not even June yet.
No, it's not. Early June, getting it early.
Look at that.
Yeah, and this is coming from two people who literally critique anime. Like, this is what we do. We discuss things, we say what we don't like about them and what we do like about them. None of our opinions are going to make us want to threaten somebody's life. Like, that's so dramatic. You can come on the internet and shout to the void as much as you like that you don't like something. Do not take that to a human being.
Mm-hmm. I went off on one hell of a tangent about something that just pissed me. Oh, yeah, the fucking horses. In the last episode, I went off.
Yeah.
You think I'm going to go and threaten the artist that made those shitty horses? No, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to bitch about it. But also at the end of the day, it's so minuscule, I don't actually care.
Yeah.
Like, that whole tangent was literally a bit. Like, I had completely forgotten about it until I was like, what have I really bitched about here lately? And yet at the end of the day, it's insignificant. Mm-hmm. Like, if that's all you have to bitch about, get a life.
Yeah.
Like, it is not that important.
Yeah. I mean, like, we critique things, then we stop recording, and then we don't think about them until we edit the episodes. It's not important enough for you to be sending death threats. Not that I think that anybody who's listening to this, because we're all special, and all the people that listen to this are amazing and have morals, compasses, and brains in their heads. And so you guys, I know, would never do that. But
you guys are great.
You guys are great. We love you. But I would feel like I wasn't doing my due diligence if I didn't call out that behavior. And I know you would feel the same way, Brad. Like, we do not ever accept that kind of behavior as something that is fine. It's not.
It is 100% not acceptable in any way, shape, form, or fashion.
Yeah.
And again, it's just don't be a prick, because at the end of the day, they're people, you're people, we are people. And we have opinions, but just because we have opinions does not make us right.
Yeah.
Like, it might seem right to us, but again, that our opinions don't make us right. And it's, I don't know. Like, it's that type of stuff, which is why, like, we are so divided as individuals, because it's, you know, we don't have the ability to distinguish the difference between, you know, people having opinions and, you know, having to be right about everything.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
opinions are like buttholes. You care about your own the most.
Yeah, and it's just, I don't know. And also, like, opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one.
Yeah.
So just sit on yours and don't fucking worry about it.
Yeah.
Discuss it, but don't be a dick about it.
Yeah. Sit on your asshole.
I mean, technically you do.
Well, you should sit on your cheeks, but your asshole should be involved somewhere, I guess.
I mean, I guess it really just depends on, you know, if you have an ass at all. I have no ass. That's why I have to wear a belt, because my pants don't stay up.
You heard it here first. Brad has no opinion, nor an asshole. Canon. And
I have no opinion, and yet I spent like 15 minutes in the last episode bitching about horses.
Yeah. Okay, so with that, anything else that you wanted to say on Solo Leveling, or are we going to give our final thoughts?
I mean, again, it is a very enjoyable story. Mm. I had a great time watching it, like, again, regardless of my whole, you know, bitching and moaning about the pacing of the story, like, regardless of that, it was an entertaining story. Mm-hmm. It just had its lulls because of the excess exposition dumping, but besides that, it was it was a great story overall. It was a lot of fun, and yeah, that's it. That's all I got.
What do you give it?
I give it an 8.
8. I'm gonna give it a 7. The reason why is because I think the content is really good. I think the art style is generally really good. I think the sound design was really, really good. I do not like the pacing, as Brad said. I do not like a lot of the techniques they didn't use through storytelling. I was going to say the techniques they did use, but I think it's the lack of technique they had through a lot of their storytelling and their monologuing and their, that was not great. I don't like the fact that episode 7 or 6.5 was a recap. I think in a one core anime, you shouldn't have a recap, in my opinion. If it's already been pushed back twice, if they're still struggling to get content out, they need to be looking at their time management. Something is going wrong within the production of the anime, because no anime should be taking that long to produce. Being pushed back twice and having a recap episode in there to give yourself like more time or less content that you need to do, something is going wrong there. You're not giving yourself enough time to begin with to get everything you need doing. You've overshot yourself. Like, something within the management side of this production went wrong, because the audience should never have to know that much stuff is going wrong behind the scenes. But clearly something was. So, yeah. Maybe it was accounting. Like, I don't know where in the management side of things something was going wrong. And I'm not saying this is the artist, because I know that artists, like, it's not them. It's somebody who was producing a deadline did not match that deadline with the amount of content that was needing to be produced. There was a disconnect. And the audience should never know that there is a disconnect. That's not seamless production. That's bad design, bad management.
Yeah, and again, it's one of those things of if the production has to be postponed, then postpone it. But I feel like that's such a thing about weekly television anime, is they are still working on it as it's coming out.
Yeah.
And I get it. Publishing companies and producers and all of that, like, they want to get their stuff in front of people as quickly as possible so people don't forget about it.
But this was one of the best manhwas, the highest rate. Nobody was going to forget about this.
Yeah. I mean, I would have been fine if they'd have pushed it back till the spring to make sure that they didn't have that. Now, would it have pushed back the second season? Maybe.
Yeah.
But again, it would have been fine. Like, I don't give a shit about that.
But even then, I don't think that you should have to push back. Like, I'm not saying that you can never push back an anime, but pushing back an anime, to me, shows signs of something going wrong within the production side of things. Somebody within somewhere has been like, we need to get this out now. And then the content, the people who are actually making the show, are being like, we cannot get it out for that time. And then that person's like, well, I'm putting this date out anyway. And then people are rushed, production drops, and it turns out to be shit. Or it ends up having to be delayed. Or sometimes you're going to get artists that are going to be like, oh yeah, I can do this. But they don't know how much work it's actually going to be until they dive into it, realize how much work it is, and then have to backtrack. Professionals should be better at being able to discuss harmoniously how long something is going to take to make. It should not be on the audience to wait for a production that has been promised, to wait for a date that has been promised. That's a negative for me for the show. Not saying, like, I don't know, a lead artist leaves the company and it was completely unexpected. Shit happens. Like, that kind of shit happens. You can't judge that. This happened so much that it's not one trip up that caused this. This was a fundamental issue with planning.
I mean, even if it comes down to, you know, artists still working from home, so therefore it slows down production times, like, that's fine. It
should be taken into account, though.
Yeah, but another thing, too, the animation quality in this never dipped.
Yeah.
Which is one thing I will say. Like, you can tell with, like, say, JJK, for instance, how they changed animation styles for fight scenes and whatnot to accommodate, you know, the overarching, you know, production issues.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I would rather an anime be pushed back than to have working conditions like with what MAPPA puts their people through.
100%.
So it's also one of those things where if you need a recap episode to try to get through that, it's fine. Like, I will 100% get behind that if you didn't push production back twice. That's where my issue with the recap episode for this came from. Like, if it didn't, if it wasn't pushed back twice, then I would have been much more forgiving with it, because again, the animation style never dipped throughout the entirety of the show. So I cannot complain.
Yeah.
About that.
I think that's the thing that's really bugging me, is like that it was pushed back twice and there was a recap episode. That's a fundamental issue. Yeah. Mm. I get that shit happens, and I'm not saying that when shit happens, anime should, like, you should all be working 100 hours a week and, you know, get the shit done because we're more important. No, life's not that deep. If you have to push it back, fine. But this, in cases like this, this isn't a shit hit the fan because of something unexpected. This was a, we did not allocate and properly plan the actual amount of time this production of the quality that we want it to be is going to take. So from the very beginning, it was always going to take longer than their projected date, because it wouldn't have not had they not pushed it back twice. Like, if they could have done it in that time, they would have done it in that time. So yeah. Something happened. Somebody pushed them, or they pushed themselves to try and make it within a date that they couldn't do it in, that there was no possible way for them to be able to do it in. That's an issue, because as a viewer, you're exhausted by the time you get to watch it. With marketing, even. The promotions for this are going to be exhausted by the time the show actually airs, because it's been pushed back twice. So you've already seen the imagery twice. The announcements are going to put a bad rep for the studio. Ah, A1 Pictures, their shit are getting their shit out on time. Then you add in the recap episode, ah, fuck A1 Pictures, like, they can't get there. Like, it's not good press for the studio. So from a marketing standpoint as well, just not a good look.
Yeah, again, it's one of those things of anime should be finished by the time they're airing. If you have to make some, like, final, like, production issues and whatnot to, like, clean some things up or anything, that's fine.
Yeah.
But your production should be pretty much fully wrapped up by the time it starts airing.
Yeah.
Or if you are still working on it, be working on the last episode by the time the first episode airs. Mm-hmm. Like, give yourself enough leeway to where you're not going to run into these issues, because it, in a situation like this, to where it's been pushed back twice and then you still need a recap episode, it leaves a bad taste in viewers' mouths.
Yeah.
Again, unless they just had like a COVID outbreak or something similar to what, like, Dogakobo had go on with both Shikimori and Kubo Won't Let Me Be Invisible. Like, if you have a COVID outbreak, I get that. Like, you gotta send people home and, you know, clean out the office for basically a week because you want to, you know, keep your employees healthy. But I don't recall hearing about anything like that. And if it was, you know, just kept under wraps, that's fine. But let people know, like, there's a reason for it pushed back, rather than just being like, nah, no episode this week. We'll be back next week.
Yeah.
Because it leaves a bad taste in people's mouths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the things that I'm going to be curious about is to see the numbers that the second core pulls and whether or not the second core gets pushed back. Because in my head, I'm assuming that the second core isn't coming out until next year, even though we're expected to be getting it in autumn of this year. I'm expecting it to actually come out next year because of this show having been pushed back twice. In my brain, I'm just like, oh, the next one's going to be pushed back too.
Mm-hmm.
So
I am curious though, to see how the culture is going to be like in Japan, because even though I'm not going to be anywhere near like conversationally fluent in Japanese by the time we get there, but still we'll be able to get the vibe on like kind of the overarching feeling for, you know, how certain shows are depending on like the marketing we see and stuff like that.
We see. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm curious because it'll be airing while we're there. Like, it will have just started if it airs in the fall.
Yeah.
So we can kind of, you know, gauge that versus, say, ReZero, which will also be airing in the fall. So I'm quite curious to see how all of that is going to be whenever we get around to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I am as well. But yeah, that's it for me.
That's everything I've got. So thank you all so much for listening. You can find more episodes and also just full-on extra content on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/bnbanime. If you are hearing this bit on YouTube, you can listen to the full unfiltered episodes on anywhere where you get your podcast listening, Spotify, Apple, all that jazz, or also on our website at bnbanime.com. We have socials, BNB Anime, literally everywhere. Also, we have merch. We have little stickers made by this lovely individual over here that you can't actually see, but she's there at Etsy.com/BNB Anime. She also has her own lovely little stickers at Etsy.com/Blue Francis, to where, you know, you can get some adorable stickers there as well. And next week, we have a very special episode for the BNB Anime podcast. We actually have a guest for the first time ever. We've been doing this shit for 4 years.
Yeah.
Like, this podcast is in preschool now, and it took us this long to actually have a guest on here. Holy shit.
They're in England. They're in actual school.
Oh, look at that. I don't know what the fuck that means. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, no, I suppose they would be starting actual school in September.
Actually, no, I was in kindergarten and
whenever I was four. But it would be this next September coming rather than right now. Still preschool for now.
Yeah, as I mean, right now is preschool.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so, special guest in Melissa White. She is returning back to the podcast feed and to the YouTube channel.
A legit voice actor.
Yeah. And we are going to be talking about one of her favorite anime in When They Cry, which is a fucking pain to find. Oh my God. The amount of struggle I have went through to be able to watch this. Don't even bother looking up where to find it, because I can tell you where to find it. You can either buy DVDs or you can find it in totally legal resources. Wink.
Higurashi When They Cry?
Well, no. When They Cry. Like the original version. Higurashi When They Cry. Go and Sato is a reboot that is available on Crunchyroll.
We're talking like the 2006 one?
Yes.
Apparently it's available on HiDive, according to
list. Not. I looked with VPNs, could not find it. So I've been having to watch it on totally legal things. But yeah, so Melissa is going to be on the next episode. I am so excited. I cannot wait to see how this dynamic is going to work with a third person. I'm sorry for you, because I've never edited a three-person episode, so I am so sorry.
I think it'll be fine. It'll be a learning experience for sure.
But I also don't think it's going to be that bad, because again, with video, we're able to pick up on cues a lot easier, so that should be fine.
Yeah, fully.
But, yeah, so thank you all so much for listening. We really appreciate it, and we will catch y'all next time. Bye-bye.